Good morning to you this morning. Forgot to make mention, somebody cleaned the sidewalks off yesterday when I got down here. It was already done and appreciate that. I just do a little salt down in case we had anything from last night, but do appreciate whoever did that and made my evening quicker after I got off from work. I brought me a water this time, just hang on to it. We're going to continue on in the Song of Songs into chapter 4. Chapter 3, we saw the bride and the groom, and we saw them come together in the marriage ceremony. And so chapter 4, it basically, it deals more with the marriage night. And I've told Dutch and some others that this is the chapter that I've most dreaded, because it's not that easy to stand up here and talk about those things. And but the more that I've studied this and the more that I've read and come to an understanding, you know, as hard as it may be to stand up here and talk about the physical union between a man and a woman in marriage, it is blessed by God. It is a gift from God for that, and it is something that is God approved. So although I might be a little embarrassed at some of the things that are said, we have to know that God is in all approval, and He has created this for His children, and it is a blessing. And so we will get through chapter 4, or halfway through chapter 4 today, but that's something that, you know, I was trying to think, and I think Donnie made this point at one time. I can't remember, and I may be wrong, but I can't remember a lesson of any type where we have ever really gone to the Song of Songs as and used it as, you know, solidify using Scripture to solidify maybe a point that we might be making. And I think that there's a grievous error in this, not using the Song of Songs, because it is a great instruction as to the husband and the wife, the marriage. And so I don't know what you're taking from this study, but I hopefully think that I'm learning to be a better husband. And that's, if nothing else, that's been a benefit to me. And I hope that you as listeners, you know, have that opportunity. And I know that some in the audience, some of our spouses have passed on. And I know that you guys are inspirations to all of us, because we saw the marriages that you all had, and that's the kind of marriages that us younger people, which I include myself somewhat in that, I'm in the middle, but those are things that we look at and we say, you know, that's what I want to be. And this song is God's way, it's His instruction to us. And once you get past being a little bit shy or a little bit embarrassed of some of the things, and really what's embarrassing is just the way that they use their language, and it's because it's based off of several thousand years ago. And if you take 2,000 years from now, people might look at the way we talk today and say, boy, they were silly. You know, again, we're going to be comparing the bride to some animals, but in today's day, we might be more as we would compare them to flowers or different things. And so it is it's a very beautiful book in the Bible. Honestly, and I told you this from the beginning, I had never read it before, and probably had I read it, I probably wouldn't have been so much to volunteer to do it, but I'm really glad I did. Because as any teacher will tell you, and I know I told you at the beginning I wasn't a teacher, but you can't read this constantly and be pointing things out and not become a teacher to somewhat. So I'm a little bit of a teacher, but not what Raymond it was and Dutch and Gist, but maybe someday I'll get there. But anyhow, you can't study this and come away with thinking, why didn't I think of that? Or, you know, just a simple stopping and thinking, I could be a better person, not only in my relationship in my marriage, but I can be a better individual. So we're going to go ahead and start in chapter 4. And we'll read about halfway through. It says, "How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil were doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone." Dutch, when I read this, I just thought of you. How many times have you had someone in your seat and you thought that, man, your teeth are just like a flock of sheep just surely shorn? You know, just a way of words right there, but just a sign of the times. "Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. Your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browses among the lilies. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you." We'll stop right there. verses 1 through 6, we have to remember that this is the bride and the groom. And this is basically a time of innocence, a time of being scared. And, you know, we take Solomon here, and it's wonderful to see Joanne feeling better and able to be out. I'm glad to see you feeling better. But we see that Solomon he's very, very smart here. Typically, men are creatures of sight. We can tell we like something just by seeing. Usually, we see first. It's closely followed by smell. But in this first six verses, we notice that he's taking his time. He's reassuring her about her beauty. He's reassuring her as to why he chose her to be his bride. And as we noticed in verse 1, he says, "How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves." Excuse me. The dove is a sign of peace, tranquility. You know, he's seeing peace in her eyes. He's seeing a tenderness, an innocence, and that can be attractive, that we see someone that is just, you know, glad to be here and very happy. He says that your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. What we have to understand is that the goats, their hair was that they're talking about in this region, was jet black. So the sun would shine off of their hair. And just as far as what these commentaries that I've read in both the one from the Church of Christ that the Howes and Vollmers visited that I had, and also my commentary of the book, we're talking about just the sheer beauty that and the majesticness of these goats coming down this mountain. And you have to realize that Mount Gilead is a very, very fertile mountain, so there must have been very beautiful plushness behind it. So it would have been a sight to behold. And the only thing that I could think of was, I remember a few years back over to Cave Run, there was some wild goats, some rams that had somehow made their way over to there. And if you were fortunate enough to see them sometimes, it was a majestic sight. And I was driving along one time, just minding my own business, and saw the strangest thing. A ram, you know, with those curly antlers that they have, or the horns. And so I was taken aback, you know, and I was in awe, and luckily I didn't wreck. It was a straight stretch. But, you know, they're up on the side of one of those cutout mountains as 801 goes through there. So that was kind of something that was brought to my mind as I read this. It's just he's describing her beauty. And, it's possible that using the Mount Gilead, it being fertile and a great land to be able to grow some stuff there. So he could be have been referring to her, his wife, that, you know, they, his children may come later. Yes, Don?
How beautiful creation is what, with the comparison, he looks at the goats coming over the hill, flock of goats, how beautiful God's creation is. And she is a creation, the same as the mountain with the goats, and how beautiful it all is. And that's what he's trying to tell her, how beautiful she is, how she makes him feel. It's like looking upon that mountain, like seeing the ram, and in awe of what he sees, how beautiful that creation is. That's what it appears to me.
Right? That's a great point, and that's exactly what he's doing here. And, you know, as husbands, you know, we typically aren't that well rehearsed in expressing ourselves. That's the best way I could get it out.
Poetry.
Poetry, we might read it, but do we live it? Do we act it out? You know, we have a macho gene, I guess it is. But, you know, it doesn't make us smaller to be tender. It doesn't make us smaller to express what's, and I know men, we don't express, and that's something we need to work on. But, and some of you may do better at it than I do. I just know in general that you don't see men typically expressing. But, you know, what Solomon is pointing out here is how he is expressing, you know, he is putting down the guards. A lot of times we throw up those barriers. We don't want to reveal ourselves. We don't want to reveal our true feelings. And, you know, he's letting that down and letting her know. Now, women, you know, if a man is a creature of sight, a woman is most definitely a creature of sound. You love to hear those things. Some women, it's more important what they hear than what they see. And what I mean is, you may see a woman who has what I would consider the most least attractive husband, but he might have the most attractive to her ability to make her feel like the most perfect person in the world. And that is something that as I said, men are creatures of sight. We tend to be drawn more towards attraction and beauty at first, and then, you know, it takes us a little while to realize, okay, you're a lot of looks, but the rest of you, there's not much to that, you know. So we kind of struggle with that. But women are much better than that. I guess I've always heard that women can see the heart by what we say, how we talk and things. So, you know, women are, it's very important to them, the things. And so it'd have to be, Shulamite would have to be overwhelmed somewhat, hearing these nice things. Overwhelmed may not be the right word. Maybe she just may be encouraged or built up more. You know, it's building up her confidence. Because, you know, something that all women and men need to realize, but mainly women, and this was one of the things that I got from the church commentary that Dutch brought me back, says that a woman needs to know that you find her attractive. Think about how he identifies the seven traits of her beauty, and we're in those traits right now. But she suits his desires perfectly. And I think women should understand this about men. If a man dated you, a man married you, I guarantee you that man thinks you are beautiful. And, you know, that is true. Yes, we age, we change, and Lisa and I have been married 24 years, and I'm not as skinny, and I don't have as full a head of hair, and probably not smooth as skin. I don't know if I had smooth skin. I don't know, but, you know, I look at it today, and I see some wrinkles. I'm pretty sure I didn't have it back then. I'm not that same guy 24 years ago. She's not that same girl 24 years ago. But the girl that I see is the same girl that I've always seen. And I would like to hope that she sees that same guy, because, you know, I'm a little thin on the top and this and that. But to me, that is that's just the way it is with the love that a husband and a wife has for one another. I think we still see that gorgeous creature that first took our breath away, or first, you know, caught our glimpse. And I don't care if I put on another 100 pounds I think that Lisa's still going to see the guy that, and I only weighed 140-something pounds when we got married, so, you know, or I don't even know if I weighed that much, you know, I was pretty skinny. I used to be a lot taller, too. My legs was 36 in length. Now, it ended up being my waist was 36 in length, and my legs was 32. I don't know how that happened. But see, you know, we change over time. But I think to our spouses, we're still that same creature that they fell in love with. We're still that same, you know, the first time you laid eyes on your wife, men, you know, remember that thought. And I know you ain't forgot it because you still carry it through with you. I still see it today. I still see Lisa today. And it's my hope she still sees me in that same skinny, scrawny way, wiry little guy, you know, full of vigor, you know, and full of life. You know, that's what I hope that she sees. But, you know, Solomon, he's really good here. He's focusing on her attributes, and he's not afraid to tell her. And man, basically, that's just what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes we keep our feelings to ourselves, and it would really do us justice to share what we're thinking. I know sometimes your wife might say, don't share what you're thinking, but I'm talking about your appreciation for her. I know we all feel it, but sometimes we don't say it. And Solomon is pointing out here, you know, it's beneficial to let those feelings come out. It's beneficial to say these things. Verse 2 says, your teeth are like a flock of sheep, just shorn, coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. He's saying, you know, you got beautiful hygiene here. The freshly shorn sheep would be just super white. They're clean. So, you know, any of you have ever worked with sheep or with wool or any of that stuff, you know that, you know, when it's clean, it's super white. And it's talking about, you know, her teeth, she has them all. You know, that's a benefit, you know. And that, you know, I know you see a lot of different things, but, you know, you can tell people that take care of themselves when they come in there, you know. And you know, he's pointing out here, she's not missing any teeth. She has a beautiful smile. She doesn't have a grill, you know, hasn't had it doctored up or anything. She just has what God has blessed her with, and she is taking care of that. And she is prepared herself for to be the best that she can to be presented to her husband. So, you know, and when it's talking about that each one has its twin, none of them are alone, just saying that, you know, she has a full mouthful of teeth. She's not, a lot of times we judge loss of teeth, you know, not taking care of yourself. You know, she had taken care of herself. She had been worried about her hygiene, and she had prepared to make sure that she did the best that she could to be able to keep her teeth. And, you know, the older we get, and we know as people, as we start to lose our teeth, we will miss those. We want to keep them as long as we can. And you know, so it's just pointing out that, you know, she's just a beauty. And, you know, he's just making a comparison to each part of her. He says, verse 3, your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. You know, he's attracted to her lips. You know, men, again, we are creatures of sight. And we think of kissing. We think of romance in that way, you know. But he's talking about just looking at her features and expressing to her what he likes about her. It said, one of my commentaries had said that in these ancient times, that was one of the things that they would do on the night, the wedding night, before total intimacy. They would describe one another, what they saw of each other, you know, what was pleasing about them. And I just see Solomon, he's not struggling here. So, and I got to thinking as husbands and wives, you know, sometimes, and I'm not saying that we have to do this every day or every week or whatever, but have you ever sometimes just told your husband or your wife, you know, what you appreciate about them, you know, anything like that? You know, we just get caught up in being busy all the time, and we take for granted that, oh, she knows, he knows. But sometimes it's just better to just come out and say it. And you know, Solomon And I understand that they're newlyweds, and next week they're going to fight, not next week, but the week after that, they're going to have a little skirmish. And, you know, the great thing about this book is taking you from courtship almost up to, not old age, I don't think it's old age, but they get to a point there where the marriage, you know, goes through the peaks and the valleys, the love and the hate, not hate, but the, you know, I don't want you in my face part. Just those things. So, I mean, it's typical of an everyday marriage. You know, as I mentioned weeks ago, marriage starts out that roaring fire, and sometimes it gets down to a little bit of spark, and we got to fan it and put fuel on it to make it blow up again. So, but he's focusing again on her lips and the beautiful shape, the scarlet color. But he's also talking about her lips. He enjoys listening to his bride. He enjoys hearing her talk. And I know women, you probably think that we don't like to listen to you talk sometimes because you're like, are you listening to me?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What did I say?
I don't know.
Make sure the TV's off. But it's important that we converse. It's important that we take time to listen to one another. And I think that's a point that he's pointing out here. Talks about... your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. He's talking about her cheekbones up in here. And she's blushing a little bit. You know, and he finds that attractive. How many of us can get a compliment and it doesn't kind of make us a little bit like, you know, stop, come on, Lord. No, we say stop, you know, you don't want to hear that. But it does tend to embarrass us a little bit. But... it builds us up as well. The what I want to say is like the scale of embarrassment might be down here, where the build-up scale, what it does for our confidence and is way up here. But, you know, I don't know anybody that just adores to be praised. I mean, sometimes I've not been praised a whole lot, y'all. It's just one of those things you don't seek praise, so then when someone gives you praise, it's a little bit uncomfortable maybe, and it might make us blush somewhat. So, you know, I see her just kind of blushing a little bit. The pomegranate was kind of known in this time as a love enticing fruit. So, you know, he's comparing this to a fruit that is known for love, known for passion, known for intimacy. So, you know, he's complimenting her features, and we have to remember it's the wedding night, so, you know, his mindset is on physical attractiveness and things, you know, that married couples are allowed to enjoy. And but, you know, again, I want to stress that he's taking his time and he's making her feel you know, very comfortable, and he's describing the things that he enjoys about her. Verse 4 says, your neck is like the Tower of David, built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields of all of them shields of warriors. She's tall, she's graceful, she carries herself elegantly. You know, he likes the way that she carries herself, the way that she presents herself. He's awed by the way that she carries herself with dignity. One of the things that we need to be mindful of, and we'll get to this later, but her purity that she had kept all this time. So she was not scarred, she was not marred, and she had saved herself for this day, for this man, for this husband. So why would she not be carrying herself in an elegant way? She carries herself in a way of confidence. She carries herself in a way of beauty. And, you know, we talked about the 60 warriors that came. You know, they were the best that he had. They were his friends. They were people that he surrounded himself with. And he's talking about the elegance with which she carries herself is... just like all these soldiers, I mean, she turns heads. She makes people take notice. Those people notice these soldiers. They notice the warriors. and she was someone that people would take notice of. Not so much for just her physical beauty, but also for the beauty that she has and just the way that she carries herself on an everyday basis. Any questions so far? We're through chapter or verse 4. Is there anything?
Men, you know, used to speak in general terms of things, and we see Solomon being very specific about certain aspects of the beauty of this woman. And even when women talk to other women, they notice every little thing. You know, oh, your hair. You know, Doug, if I came into the store, I said, Doug, I really like the way your hair looks today.
We wouldn't talk at all.
Sure, compliments the color of your eyes. You know, you would think something was a little bit odd. So, we don't see men...
We're not geared that way, are we?
Yeah, you just don't see men complimenting each other on their physical attributes very often. So, that's a difference, like you said, between men and women. They're just different.
But, and you made a very good point, and we touched on it in one of our earlier studies. I think it was in chapter 1, late part of chapter 1, chapter 2. We need to be specific. When your husband's, when your wife says, do I look good in this? Be specific as to why she looks good. Not just say, oh yeah, you look fine. What does that tell her? That you really didn't pay any attention. You know, when he was talking about the earrings that hung on her ears, you know, he was complimenting how the jewelry that she wore, how she made that jewelry look beautiful. Instead of vice versa, where the jewelry made her look beautiful, he was being specific and he was being honest. So these things were being pointed out to her. So, you know, it's a cover. So that's something that we as men, you know, we need to learn to be a little more specific. Not saying that I have to go to Bruce or Dutch or Dave or any of these guys and tell them how wonderful they look. You know, I can say, that's a nice jacket and tie. That's good enough. I don't have to go into detail or anything like that. And Dutch is right. Women have a tendency, you guys are just more able to compliment one another. But as far as the husband and the wife, you know, we should be able to compliment, us husbands should be able to compliment our wives. You know, it just may take a little bit of work on our behalf, but we should be able, you know, he looks at these, her eyes, her hair, her teeth, her lips, her cheeks, her neck, and her breast. You know, he doesn't get any further down than here. And he is complimented. 4, 5, 6, 7. I was thinking it was 7, but I didn't want to say it without counting. He compliments 7 attributes that she has. Okay, so, you know, this is something that we as men, we're probably lacking in, and we're not going to be as good as Solomon, but we could probably practice it and probably learn to lift our wives up a little bit. Every one of us in here, no one excluded, we have all married up. All of us men have married up, okay? They deserve to be complimented. They deserve to be appreciated. And that's God's intention for us, that we treat our spouse, especially husbands, as the weaker vessel. We, not saying that you're weaker in the mind. That is definitely not true. Only physically, maybe. But we need to lift you all up, and we need to be proud. You know, that's something that... Our wife should, next to being a follower of Christ and being accepted by Christ and having Him, having washed away our sins, our second greatest accomplishment is our spouse, I believe, and then our children. So, you know, it's something to be treasured. It's something to be cherished. Verse 5 says, your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. Her features are beautiful to look at. Remember again, man is a creature of sight. He describes the mountain of myrrh and the hill of incense. Men are, secondly, we're drawn by smell. And that is something that, you know, wait till a man's heart is through his stomach. We like to see the food that you prepare, and we like to be able to smell that food. And, you know, pretty much, you know, and I gave you a list of 10 things that how men are kind of comparable to dogs. You know, we can hear the rapper or something from 100 miles away, and we can't hear what you say 2 feet in front of us. But, you know, men are creatures of sight and smell. And his senses of these have been aroused, and his desire is to be with his wife. And he talks about, verse 6 says, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. This is their wedding night, and he is talking about, you know, through the night. But it also, he's not talking about just this night. He's talking about loving this woman that he has chosen and all of her features and all of her attributes. He's talking about loving her through the rest of his life. You know, as we think about as the day breaks and the shadows flee, you know, that can mean one night, but it can also be talking about a lifetime together. And I think that more so than just this night, he's letting her know that not only am I going to be emotionally and physically connected to you for this night, but for our life together. And we know that God intends for two to become one and to remain that way until one dies. You know, and I think that he is just telling her that, you know, everything about you, I find it so wonderful. Everything about you is so perfect. You know, to each of us marries the most beautiful woman in our hearts. And he has married this most beautiful woman. She is gorgeous. She's without comparison. You know, and he's just wanting her to know, verse 7, all beautiful you are, my darling, there is no flaw in you. You know, it's just a wonderful, he can't find anything wrong with her. Now, you know, sometimes after we've been married 4 or 5 years, you can't find anything right with them sometimes. Because we've got out of the habit. And I think if these first 7 verses here, I think if we try to emulate that. I'm not saying that we have to be exact, but I'm saying if we try to build one another up instead of tearing one another down, how much greater of a relationship will you have with your spouse? You know, it's all about being built up. It's all about being lifted up. And you chose that individual because you married the person that you dated. You found that person to be beautiful. You found something in that person that you couldn't live without. And I don't know if it was Abraham Lincoln or one of them, and I'll try to say this right because it just came to my mind. So he said, don't marry the person you think you can live with. Marry the person that you don't think you can live without. And that's, you know, the way that we need to look at this, because that's all important in the marriage is the devotion that we have one to another. And again, as I said in the beginning, you know, something that we need to be mindful of is that the marriage bed, the intimacy that we have physically one with another in the marriage is God approved. It is God's gift to us. And God wants us, you know, he tells us in Genesis, and I have these scriptures down, but we don't have time, but he says, be fruitful and multiply. You know, he wants you to replenish the earth. You can look at Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4, when it talks about the marriage bed not being defiled. Acts 10 and verse 15. Let's look at that real quick, because I think that that's something that just as quick as we can. And this is where, you know, Peter's talking about the unclean foods. And verse 15 says, the voice spoke to him, and Jesus second time said, do not call anything impure that God has made clean. And basically what he's saying is about these fruits, but a lot of times people tend to think that the physical intimacy between a husband and a wife is, for some reason, it's dirty or it's shameful or whatever. And if God created it for us, then we shouldn't call it shameful. We shouldn't call it impure. Now, I think society and the way that they have treated it, they have made that physical union between a husband and a wife, they have made it ugly. But God never intended for it to be that way. And I just thought that looking at the way that he was expressing that to Peter about the foods, he said to kill and to eat. Anything that God has created for us, it should not be shameful if we do it in the way that God had intended. And God's plan is always the best plan. Well, we made it through verse 7, so is there anything before we conclude? Appreciate your all's attention, and I hope that you're getting as much from the study as I am. Thank you.